The Diesel Podcast.
Developing innovation in English as a second or other language.
Episode 82. Are idioms appropriate?
Welcome to Diesel. This is episode 82. We are your hosts. I'm Brent Warner.
And I'm Michelle Reyes. And
we missed the last
episode. I'm still in Taiwan. You're still in Taiwan. We did, because it was spring break. Yeah.
Oh,
did you have a spring break?
This is, I think, the first time we've skipped an episode before and we put in little notes on it and did it once or twice, I think, like during Black Lives Matter and a few things like that. But I don't think we've ever properly just like skipped an episode fully, right? Not quite that way. So that was the first time. Let's not make a habit of it.
I know. We all missed us, didn't you?
Yeah, we're regular like Bran. So
but we are back.
We're back. We're here. How's Taiwan?
Taiwan is getting more humid by the minute. Mm-hmm. I can say that I have now unlocked a secret achievement, and that is coexisting with scooters on the road.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. I have to drive here, and I no longer get panic attacks whenever I get to an intersection. Now they're sort of just there, I'm zen with the scooters.
That is an achievement. You know, I've got my scooter, and I'm always worried. Yeah. So
I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
there's a little bit more available here for scooters. I would worry about you in the States.
Well, yeah, for sure. Like,
anyway, what about you?
In Taiwan, there's like tons of scooters, right? So it's like, it's kind of like,
its yeah, own so it's like, it's of, common.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
They have their own lane and everything, but you're getting ready to do something bold.
Oh yeah. I'm starting my packing. I'm getting ready to move to Japan. So I'm
moving to Japan.
Yeah, last time you were the one recording from Japan, and now you'll be back in the States and I'll be in Japan. I don't know how long you'll be in the States for, but for a little bit.
The tables have turned.
Yes. So I'm prepping my move for my sabbatical project, and so that'll be good. And then a couple other things. We mentioned it last time too, but we launched the site AI and ESL.com, and the response has been pretty good. I've been having some fun writing some of the articles and getting a couple other people to maybe potentially share. We have one guest post already on there, and so if you're interested in that conversation, because we don't want to make every Diesel episode about AI stuff, but I am very forward on pushing and kind of exploring all that stuff, and so so that's kind of our little. Can we call it a side project? We called it an offering, a Diesel offering.
A sister project?
Yeah, a sister
project. A sister project, a brother, a sibling of Diesel.
There we go. Something along those lines. So AIINESL.com, and maybe we should have kept it ESOL because Diesel is the ESOL. Anyways, there it is. AIINESL.com if you're interested. But today... We're going old school. We're talking idioms. Are you ready for are you ready to get into a fighty shell?
I'm ready.
Are you roaring like a rearing like a bull? Are you chomping at the bit?
It's go time.
It's go time.
It's go time.
All right, so Michelle, idioms. You brought up this topic. We'll get in a little bit into some of the research, not a ton of it. We're going to talk a little bit about it, but let's start with why you wanted to kind of jump in and kind of ask this question of why are idioms appropriate to teach?
Yeah, well, part of it is my sister and I, and I've talked about it before in several episodes, just a little bit when we're talking about the difference in the way we learn language, but my sister speaks in idiomatic language a large percentage of the time. And when I'm listening to her, my teacher brain or my, I don't know, my judgy English teacher brain your is elite, pointing snooty, out every
snobby.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, why did you say that? That's not clear. What if I were a language learner? I wouldn't understand that. And in my mind, I'm translating it to clearer terms. And I think it comes from being obsessed with writing clearly. Mm-hmm. When I was in college, I was just so focused on making sure I didn't use cliches and making sure I wasn't using idiomatic language. And so it's just interesting for me because, right, as a language learner, my sister's a language learner. And how is it that she has taken all of this and now that's part of her lexicon and that's just who she is. Mm-hmm. So, and of course, being language teachers, you and I will never escape the one student who will misuse an idiom in our conversation, but so proud because they're able to use it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's where my interest came from.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll dig into kind of the classroom setting, but let's talk just a little bit about the mm-hmm. about the background of idioms and kind of understanding a bit about them. We grabbed a couple of research points, and again, this is kind of it's a little bit piecemeal because we're talking about different parts here, but just to kind of share some thoughts on idioms first. I did find this this article from Rosa Elena Vego Moreno, and it's called Representing and Processing Idioms. And actually, I've started looking at it. I'm like, oh, we can't really use this for the whole episode because it's really about how the brain understands idioms and it's getting into it. But I just thought it would be interesting to bring up and share a little bit. And so I'll share just a part of this, a segment from the article. And she said, for many years, the standard way of looking at idioms has been to consider them words, as lexical items, which are listed and retrieved as chunks from the lexicon. According to this view, there's no need to worry about idioms, no need for a complex theory of how to communicate with them. The motivations for claiming this are based on the belief that the meaning of an idiom is in no way recovered from the meaning of its individual constituents, and that idioms behave as syntactic as well as semantic units. That is, there is nothing in the meaning of, quote, the and kick and bucket that tells us that kick the bucket means die. And furthermore, there is no way, once we are familiar with the idiom, to break up its meaning into individual constituents of the string. So basically what she's saying inside of here is there has been a traditional way of thinking that you're saying, hey, if I say kick the bucket, I can only understand that alone as death if I learn that separately. And then if we change that around, then there's no understanding of it. But that was actually, it turned out like later on in the article, she kind of got into it a bit and talked about how that's not really accurate, right? That's not really a proper way to think about it because there are lots of idiomatic expressions that we might say in different ways, and maybe we wouldn't normally say them, but if we heard someone say it, we would understand it. So so the examples that she gave, Ishel, when you and I were joking pre-show a little bit, different versions of this. So it's like to spill the beans, right? Is an idiom that means, which by the way, I don't use it very often, so it'll go to your point later, but this is an example of spill the beans means to like let out a secret, right? But she gave some different versions of that. She said, the beans were finally spilled, or...
I didn't spill a single bean.
Yeah, don't look at me, I didn't spill a single bean, or you know, something like that, right? And it's like, yeah, we probably...
Poured the beans.
Well, we wouldn't say those things, but like we would still kind of understand them, even though it's not spill the beans, or we might even be able to say something like, oh, you know, he gave up on life, that bucket kicker, or something like that, right? And that wouldn't really be normal, but we could kind of understand it with poetic license, right?
Bucket kicker.
Yeah. Are you a bucket Sorry, kicker?
That just sounds hilarious.
Right? I don't know. I'm just making it up, but you get what I'm saying, right? Which is like you could still follow right. along with it. And so, mm-hmm. so her argument here is that, you know, the idioms. There's an argument that like, oh, idioms are, you just have to learn that phrase and it's alone and totally isolated. And she's saying, well, no, not really. It's like there can be different setups and the way that the words are strung together could still possibly be understood. So she kind of spreads out from that. I don't know if you found anything that you thought was interesting in some of the articles that we were exploring here.
Another interesting quote is by DeCaro in the article, The Advantages and Importance of Learning and Using Idioms in English. And the quote is, some idioms of the worldwide English have first been seen in the works of writers like Shakespeare, Sir Walter Scott, Lewis Carroll, or even in the paperbacks of contemporary novelists. An example of Shakespearean quotation can be found in the following sentence. As a social worker, you certainly see the seamy side of life. Biblical references are also the source of many idioms, sports terms, technical terms, legal terms, military slang, and even nautical expressions have found their way to the everyday use of English language. And I can attest to that because I've had to explain to this to students oftentimes, hey, why did we start saying hit the head or go to the restroom? Mm-hmm. Do you know that one, Brent? Hit the head?
Isn't the head like in the Navy? Isn't that like the
is that what it means? Oh, apparently I'm the only one who didn't know this, but we had to. Yeah, that's exactly correct. It came up.
I got it. Give me a point. Give me a point. Give me a gold star.
You get a point because this was an older idiom. Yeah. So you just dated yourself.
like an old person's idiom? Is that what you mean by that?
Oh, no, I didn't say that.
How dare you offend any listeners who knew that idiom and
understand?
Yeah.
So again, this is the conversation that we've been having.
Yeah, for sure. So there's lots of different things to kind of consider in terms of idioms, where they came from, there are different parts. So we're going to get into this in the second half. We're just keeping the background a little mm-hmm. understanding of idioms to start with here. We'll jump over and kind of get into the conversation that you wanted to have, which is essentially that you want to ban idioms, right? That's what you're saying.
That's extreme.
Yeah, I'm taking your extreme view. I'm taking your view to the logical extreme. But we'll get into
it. Let's ban idioms.
Let's jump over.
So how necessary and useful are idioms for language learners? I think it's, my opinion is there, it confuses the emergent learners. And you have to have a level of sophistication to be in your language use in order to be able to use them.
Yeah.
I suppose you would be able to understand some of them, but it might be even more confusing because they also have constructions that emerging learners aren't used to.
Yeah. So I do understand what you're saying here. So so your perspective, you know, is kind of coming from the like, hey, I want to be clear in my communication. We want to make sure. And then idioms are by default unclear because they don't
meanings are abstract often, or there's two meanings, the literal and the abstract, figurative.
Right. So I'm going to argue against that. Number mm-hmm. one, students love idioms. Like, students love idiom classes. We have idiom classes at our school, and they always fill up.
They're popular.
They're super popular. Students want to go into them. I haven't taught that class at our school for, I don't know if I ever have. I've taught idiom classes in the past, right? And like, they feel kind of easy because they're just like, hey, let's look at this term and let's learn how to use. You know, like it's kind of just like vocabulary. I mean, sorry, I'm not trying to minimize the teaching experience, but you know what I mean. Like where students like it because for a couple of reasons. Number one, it can be fun and it can be kind of lighter, but also the reason that I like idioms, and I think we're going to have to, you know, we're going to have to balance this conversation out a little bit, but idioms mm-hmm. give a good insight into the thinking of the speakers of whatever language you're studying, right? And so mm-hmm. how do these people think about the world? How do these people understand interactions? What are ways that they kind of view things through different prisms or perspectives? And that to me, like when I was studying Japanese, that was really valuable, like to go, oh, okay, like that's kind of like you kind of just get little little hints of the personality or the style of approaching the world behind idioms. And that's why I think that they're really important from my perspective. Yes, I do understand that some of them are unclear or people like stop using them, and it's very hard to know if, hey, is this a common idiom? Is this used all the time? Maybe here in California, people use some of the ones that are very different than they might use, you know, in the South or, in the Pacific Northwest or, you know, wherever else it is, right? So sometimes they're regional.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why I think that they're valuable, but I understand that they're a little bit hard to parse out properly.
I guess my experience shapes the opinion I have. Mm-hmm. And that's partly because of two things. Number one, of course, I'm a language learner, but I loved English, and I loved anytime there was an idiom, oftentimes I could assimilate it to something in Spanish because I would translate it in my head and I would say like, oh, that's kind of like when we say blah, 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 blah. But then there would be idioms that made no sense because when you translate it, I couldn't understand. And so I would say, okay, I don't know what that means. But then I would guess from the context. But it never really became part of my lexicon or my part of the personality that I have in my writing voice. You know, we always have a writer's voice. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of a stickler with myself about being clear. And so then, of course, as I'm getting older when I became a teacher, I noticed that on orientation week, when all the international students come in to take their TOEFL test or whatever they're taking and getting their schedules, so many times I would see my colleagues get into some kind of misunderstanding with the student, and the poor student is sitting there anxious because they don't understand. It's their first week and they're trying to figure out, they want to make sure they pay their tuition, they want to make sure they're in the right class, they have the right book, but then the instructor is using idioms. And I remember always feeling so bad for the students and knowing, no, you just have to say this and this and this. And so inevitably what happened at the beginning of my teaching career is the students would come to me and say, the teacher told me this. I said, oh, this is what they mean. And I would explain it in very simple, concrete terms. And I would never, and then I just made it a point, especially with the lower level students, not to use idioms. And if I were to use an idiom, I would always say, since I don't use them, I would say, you might hear some people say blah, 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 and this is what it means.
Right.
You can use it, you can try it. But I don't use it. And I will tell them, I said, if you feel comfortable, you can try it. And so that's kind of where my relationship with it. Yes, I think it's a relationship I have with idioms.
Oh, yeah. You've got, this is like a personal trauma issue for you around idioms. So, but I do understand what you're saying, right? Because a lot of times I've had students that are very into studying idioms, and they're like, they just like they grab onto it, like that's the thing that I want to learn because that's gonna like they yeah. feel like that's gonna help them boost their language skills a mm-hmm. lot more than they really do, right? I think I've told this story before, but
I love it. Tell it again.
So the when I was in Japan, first we have to go all the way back to college. So in San Diego, I knew this Japanese guy. He was a college student, exchange student, and we were pretty good friends. We hung out sometimes. And then he left and we kind of lost track. And then I went back to Japan and randomly he drove by the school that I was teaching at during a recess when I happened to be outside, and he drove by and saw me. And like he kind of freaked out, and so he jumped out of the car, and I had gone back inside by the time he got out, and so he passed a note to another teacher like through the fence, and the note was something along the lines of, you know, Brent, out of the blue I saw you when I was driving by, and I'm tickled pink to see you, and you know, here's my number, please call me, right? Something like that. And so I'm sitting there going you know, he's really trying to get these idioms in and kind of overdoing it a little bit. But you know, he was trying, and that was, you know, connected to his interest in those things. But it was kind of like Okay, when you overuse them, or when you get these kind of structures that are maybe beyond your regular grammatical ability, but they're tied into the idiom, so you get the prepositions in kind of more sophisticated forms, things like that. And so that can be a little bit of a place where, as a native English speaker, not as a teacher, but just as a native English speaker, and kind of imagining that I'm interacting with this person and they're kind of, they're developing English. And then all of a sudden this like really gorgeous phrases or clear, like these abstract terms perfectly put together come in, then it can be a little, it's not wrong, but it's just kind of like, it throws you off somehow. Like when you know someone is still developing and then something comes out really well, right? It's the same thing as like, when we get magical papers that are like suddenly perfect, right? And it's like, what happened? Where did that one come from, right? And so I can definitely see where there's a little bit of a balance here to figure out.
So, and I've had the opposite, not I guess a similar effect, but even with the more skilled students, let's say I've had interactions, for example, is particularly overseas, where I've met someone who maybe is a translate, they use their language skills to translate or to help people around that don't speak the language, and they're able to communicate, but then they also use so many idioms packed into something because they want to build rapport with that person. Mm. But rather than allowing that to help build depth and like a friendship or a relationship, it actually seems phony. Mm. And I know that the person's probably trying to say, hey, I understand these phrases that help you to recognize that I know that I can be in your in-group. Mm. And I don't have a particular example, but I can think of several where I thought, oh my gosh, they're using them all appropriately, but an actual native speaker would not use so many within their speech, or especially if you're trying to make someone feel welcome or at ease, or trying to build a relation, like a connection.
That's super interesting, because I could see where that is like, So their goal, the way that they're doing it and their intention is kind of working against them in the sense of what they're actually, mm-hmm. their end goal is, to make friends or to mm-hmm. that, I like that point about being part of the in-group, right? Because language, idiomatic expressions are a big part of being in an in-group, right? And so students that kind of recognize that might try to use that as a way in to say like, hey, I could make friends.
It's like a little white flag saying, I'm a friend, you can talk to me, I can understand. I understand your pop culture references and I understand this, but it's like what at my institution, we call the students who you'll talk to them and we call them the Netflix students or the street students, because they have this, they understand the pop culture references and they can fool you. But as soon as you start to talk, get any abstract language, they just only know idiomatic stuff that they learned from YouTube influencers mm-hmm. or Netflix. And it's like, oh, there's actually no depth beyond that. Mm-hmm.
So if you're thinking about this, right, because there also needs to be a transition into using those things smoothly, right? So you can't just say, hey, don't use them until you're totally comfortable. Like, that's not really how we teach, right? I assume that that's not how you teach. It's like, let's experiment with it. We're going to make mistakes mm-hmm. inside of here, right? And then later it will hopefully balance out and become more natural. I'm not sure, though, mm-hmm. if teachers are talking about this part, right? Like, don't overuse... I haven't had this conversation with other people, so I'm not totally sure, but like, don't overuse idioms, right? Don't, mm-hmm. Be careful, like pay attention. I don't even know how to tell a student to pay attention to whether or not this is considered common or modern or fading,
That's a really good point, because what I've started to do, because again, just because I don't use idioms myself doesn't mean I get to rob the students of an experience with language. Mm-hmm. they should be the ones choosing, and ultimately they should be the ones experiencing with the language. I never really feel truly comfortable when I'm using idioms. And again, I just think, of course, I'm sure that some have snuck into my lexicon, but I just generally don't. And one of the things I've started doing just to be more understanding of and more inclusive of different ages, different geographical areas, is I'll tell students when we're teaching something, and then like content, whatever the content is, that topic, I'll say there are a few idioms that usually may show up in this context. Here's one, but the younger generation now is maybe using this one. And I don't use any of these, or this is the one that I'm comfortable with. And my mom or an older generation might say something like this, and I understand what they say, but I wouldn't use it. And so I start to give them the comparison of generations so that they understand too. And it happened recently where we were talking about idiomatic ways of saying that something is great. And of course, you know, like, that's cool, that's awesome, that's rad, that's dope, that's sick, that's lit. And so now you've got a whole span of generations, but I cannot have a 35-year-old saying, wow, that's lit.
That's on fleek. Is that even still around?
Oh my gosh, that one. And because,
because there is a point here too, where you're talking about what is properly idiomatic versus what is like trending slang. Right. And so some of these things are going to, you're going to have to balance these things out too, right, in the conversations.
Well, we talked about spilling the beans, right? Mm-hmm. And because of spilling the beans, letting a secret out, nowadays, because social media has taken influence on our intake of entertainment, now you have spill the tea. And that's what people say. Spill the tea means let out the secret. Like, who spilled the tea? Give me the tea.
Yeah.
And so again, it is changing. And that's now I had my students actually look it up to see when it entered the dictionary. And it was like 2 years ago. And it's about the time when it was the pandemic and most of us were at home. So we were taking more of our material from online sources, like our reading and our intake. And so there was more usage of that. And now that used to be slang, but now it's becoming like, I almost see it as a generational replacement for spill the beans.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's another thing, like many of our idioms may have come from slang or slogans that they just became sayings and we understand them. And of course, those are maybe from social media, but we have the ones that are field specific, or there's a lot of military idioms, as that quote said. And I guess my point here is using language that even native speakers don't relate to. And there was a conversation online, teachers, just not language teachers, but just a regular class, where the students asked the teacher why they always said they were sounding like a broken record. And the students didn't understand what a record was. And now we joke about it, but it's really become like we're in an age where students didn't live through 9/11. They didn't live through not having a cell phone. They don't really know what a phone with buttons is or things that are corded. So what is it for that student? What does it mean? What use is that?
Yeah, that's interesting.
And so that just sparked the conversation. Teachers started sharing their experiences with Generation Z. And then that, I felt so validated. And I was like, yes, finally you understand. So then I took that conversation over to Facebook, and I had several colleagues. Eric Roth was one of them. Nina Ito, a couple of my colleagues, Ashley, and a couple of other people were giving their experiences on just their interaction with idioms. And some were very positive, and some were like, yes, I understand. It's very confusing or very frustrating when someone's speaking. It's like you're having to figure out a puzzle. And so again, but I think what came out of that ultimately is that And I think Eric Roth put it really nicely. And I think Steve McIsaac also mentioned that oftentimes, you know, idioms could be exclusionary or inclusionary. It shows a shared experience. It shows history, your knowledge, and they actually add to the beauty and diversity of English, which is what, or of any language really, which is what we, you know, we argue with, like, no, why should we be grammar sticklers? There's a beauty of language when things shift, that's, it's alive. And so I think that my views, my extreme views on banning idioms have kicked the bucket. Well, can I say that? So, is that awkward? Is it weird?
I don't, yeah. I mean, have you stopped throwing chalk at the students who use idioms?
Oh, I'm totally fine if they use idioms, but I'll tell them, hey, a better idiot. Here, let me give you two more. And then you decide. Where I haven't stopped throwing chalk is my poor sister. And every time she leaves me a video message, I stop the video and I said, did you know that the idiom you just used came from this, blah, blah, blah. And
give her a break. How did you learn that?
How did you know? How did you know? No, she's traumatized because I used to correct her pronunciation when we were little. It's a sore topic.
Clearly. But this is kind of interesting though, because I was, as you're talking about all these things, I was thinking of, like, you know, when I was growing up and maybe I didn't understand idiomatic expressions that my mom said because they were from her generation, you know. But I also think that there's value in understanding those things and saying, like, hey, this is an old idiom and, like, it's fun and it's interesting. In the same way that I was talking about, like, you know, in my studies of Japanese, like, you can also get a feeling of how previous... My mom's still here and good, but, like,
people with different experiences, right, is right. Really what it is.
So,
right?
So, like, that thing, and then you can kind of get insights into the ways that those people see the world too. Now, you do have to have a pretty, you know, sophisticated grasp on the language to really pull that out. But, like, I've had ones where, you know, my mom, even still, there was recently, there was one that she came up with, and it was like, something about, like, dancing with clay feet or something like that, and I'm like, I don't know that expression at all. And my mom was shocked.
Not dancing with two left feet.
No, not dancing with two left feet. It was something about, like, a clay feet something. Sorry, I didn't look it up before. It just kind of came up at the moment, but it was something along those lines. And we had an interesting conversation about
I've
it
never because heard I'm like, that.
I'd never heard it before, but she was shocked because it felt like to her it was so ingrained. It just came out of her mouth naturally, right? Like, she didn't think about it. She just kind of said it as something else. And I'm like, what do you mean by that? But I like those moments too, because you get to talk, you get to share, kind of understand a little bit more. Obviously I forgot what the idiom was, so sorry, mom. But you know, in those moments you get to share a little bit and you get to see what's going on. So I think that there is another level of value. I am interested, you know, I don't want to get too, like, social justice, you know, informed here, but there are parts of these that are very, you know, patriarchal.
They reflect, they reflect the society of that time. And I think, yep, that's, I was going to add something to that. I was going to say, so you're talking about sharing these moments with your mom. And of course, my mom communicates usually mostly in Spanish. She speaks English and everything. But there are certain idioms she uses in Spanish that will trigger memories of times in Mexico with my grandma. And then my sister and I will mimic the way the idiomatic language my grandmother used. And it's so endearing. But some of those things you would never, ever say because we just don't trade food anymore. We don't for example, there's a couple where my sister and I was like, why do people in Spanish say this all the time? It sounds so bad. And like you said, it reflects the society they grew up in and what they were taught. And I've had to tell a couple of my aunt, so we don't say that anymore. Here's a better something you can say instead. And it's like, and they didn't realize it. It's just, you know, and some of them could have racial undertone. Some of them, I haven't heard anything blatantly racist, but still, it's not.
Yeah, no, they could be there, but we don't know that there's you know, right, racist issues inside of there. So sometimes that'll come up, and I'll be like, oh my God, I had no idea that expression came from this or something like that too. So yeah, absolutely. It's tricky, right? Because I think all parts are interesting. Obviously, as linguists, we're interested, right, to know what things mean and how they connect with ideas. But I do understand, and I think that these days, because of social media and acceleration, right, there's a lot more, a faster push for change to get rid of ones that are, you know, maybe harmful, or maybe, you know, make people upset or something like that. But also, you know, I have a little, a slightly conservative take on it too.
A fondness?
Yeah. Well, it's just that, like, all language communicates something, right? And so there are ways, you know, like they're interesting to see. Not to say that I'm supporting, you know, anything racist or, you know, sexist or whatever else is. Yeah. That's not what I'm trying to get to. But it is interesting to see, like, okay, this is the way that this group of people communicates these ideas.
Used to communicate, right?
Because then it also, like I said, it helps you maybe see ways that they want to view the world, or the ways that they maybe want to talk to you about things can open that up. Now, again, when we're coming back to our language learners, that is very complicated because it starts getting into very, very fine nuances. So I think you might have an argument for holding off on idioms until intermediate or above, right?
Right. And I think that's what the books that are written for language learners that are idiom books, they're usually, you know, separated by topic or by category. And I think that makes it a little bit more comprehensible for them. But you are required a certain level of English competency or language competency in order to be able to play with the language, because what use is it learning it, but you can't play with it and try it out for yourself and then decide. And I think that's where I do agree. I think that my bone to pick with people. Sorry, I had to think of it. Anyhow, my bone to pick with people is
if anyone listening can tell us the exact number of idioms that we've used in this episode, whether we are aware of it or unaware, you're going to get a free sticker sent through the mail. What a win for hours of just like picking through every word we said. Oh my gosh.
It's just with the lower level students being aware that they're learning survival English. So as soon as you give them something incomprehensible, they panic, and then they see it as, I'm not performing. My English isn't good enough. And it might be that the person talking to you is just using very difficult language.
Yeah.
So it's the same as if a student is using the word love versus a synonym of love, and that synonym is outdated, and I can't think of one at the moment. But like run versus walk versus jog versus stroll versus
It's like saying like someone's the cat's pajamas, you know, and it's like, you know, it's like
I don't even know what cat's pajamas. And I recently learned the bee's knees, but I don't even know.
It's the same meaning. The bee's knees means the cat's pajamas. It means that you like someone a lot. You really like them. You think they're great.
But why? But why cat and pajamas?
A cat in pajamas is wonderful.
But why? What's the association? What about? So you know the idiom, you know the meaning, but you don't know why. We'll see
the history of it. But like it is always interesting to try and look back and go see what the history can be, right? Yeah. But there's definitely tons of them that we don't know why we say them, right?
Yeah.
I think that's going to be, are idioms appropriate? Maybe the answer is not so much for emerging learners, but more so for upper intermediate, maybe even kind of intermediate and above,
where it's fun and not frustrating, right? Yeah. Where it's more fun rather than frustrating.
Okay. So in all of this, I did look it up. Feet of clay. It means a fundamental flaw or weakness in a person otherwise revered. So, so maybe your feet of clay.
Was your mom criticizing your?
Your feet of clay is that you don't like idioms. Otherwise, you're revered.
Oh, thank you. And yours is your dancing?
I guess there wasn't dancing. Dancing wasn't a part of it. No, it wasn't. No, I wasn't like dancing in front of my mom and she's like, you've got feet of clay. Like your dancing is terrible. No. Sorry.
Oh my gosh.
I think the conversation was something different. And then she brought up the idiom feet of clay, but, now I don't remember the full context of it. I just remember it was clay feet. It was feet of clay, but yeah, there we go. So everybody walk away with that one. Please teach it to your students and see if they can use it naturally in their language.
All right, it is time for our fun finds. And today I have something that I found in Taiwan, but it's actually from Spain. Mm. And this is the Suavina lip balm. They're little tubs of lip balm. It's about $3, but it's all made with essential oils. And there's no, there's not a lot of the chemical stuff. So you just put it on, doesn't feel greasy. The next morning, it has absorbent to your skin and it just feels soft. So if you've got chapped lips, which I've had a bad case of recently, Suavina lip balm from Spain.
All right. Nice. So my,
what do you have?
Is a game. It's called Pando. Ooh. Pando. Have you heard of this?
Pando. I've heard of Panda.
Not Panda, Pando.
So tell us about Pando.
So this is a card game. I was actually looking for this like for class, you know, like a game that we could play with my students and things like that. But it's also a family and fun games. So basically what it does is it's a trivia game that how well do the people that you're playing the game with, how well do those people know you, right? And so, you know, it's like, it asks questions and most of them are kind of like yes, no questions, you know, but there might be a few other, some variations, but you can play with it. So as I was getting into it, there's like lots of different language, right? So, so it said, you know, the questions might be things like, do I prefer boxers or brief? Or do I partake, I'm looking at the examples that are on the thing, right? Do I trust doctors? Do I prefer mayonnaise or Miracle Whip, right? And so it's kind of this question of like, how well do you know this person? And then you play the game, whatever the rules are. But the cool thing is like, these questions are an opportunity to like, get to know people better too, right? So if you're working with a class I like these games, these card games that have like big stacks of cards because you can give different groups little sections of cards and then play with them. And then I thought that this one, you know, maybe the students don't know each other well enough to answer some of these questions, and I pulled out all the underwear questions for my own class.
Of course you did. You know, when it's not death, it's underwear.
So I those ones are not going to be, you know, involved in there, but they are kind of, you know, you can give guesses about them and then the people can tell you if you're right or wrong, and like, and you know, then there's lots of opportunities to build language around these types of card games. So this one is called Pando, P-A-N-D-O. There's also a kids version of it. So there's a not safe for work version, but there's also a kids version. So it's like, depending on the level that you're wanting to work with and the language.
Diversity.
Yeah. So Pando is the game, you can check it out. We have a link in the show notes for that as well.
Cool. As always, thanks for listening to the show. If you're giving us a shout out anyway, tag us on social media. Give us your best idiom, your least favorite idiom.
Oh, yeah. If you can review the show.
I'd like to hear.
With idioms.
Or that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Let's get creative.
There's a challenge for you.
Yeah. Review the show with idioms somehow. You could review it on social media. You can review it in the reviews places, whatever. Share, what's your favorite idiom? That's what I want to know. I bet you people out there have some really good ones too, because you know what I was thinking? I've always been jealous of the idiomatic language of like the Deep South, like that, you know, there's all these cool terms in there, and I wish I could use those more naturally, like as part of my lexicon. I always thought that, but they're not really, they don't fit me, you know, but they are cool. There are some interesting ones. Which is to say that we're on Patreon. We're on Buy Us a Coffee. If you want to support the show in any way, please do. You can go leave us reviews. That is one of the best ways for us that we appreciate. You can find the show notes for this
episode. Share the show. Share the show.
Share the show. Share the show. I wish you were doing
at diesel.org/82.
Thank you for taking over. Diesel.org/82. And you can listen to us at Voice Ed Canada. That's VOICED.ca. We're on the Twitters and some other places, many other places, but not exactly active everywhere. So shows at Diesel Pod. I am at Brent G. Warner.
And I'm Ishelle at @ixy_pixy. That's IXY_PIXY.
Mm-hmm. In Burmese, thank you is Jizuwa. So Jizuwa for tuning in to the Diesel Podcast. Ishelle, stop laughing at my terrible Burmese.
Nobody's laughing.
You thank are covering you. Your mouth and barely containing it. I dropped the ball on that one.